Welcome to our special budget 2021 edition of Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. Blockbuster budget. Who gets the help and who didn't?
We're all tired, frustrated, and even afraid. But we will get through this. We'll do it together.
Less than 1 hour ago, Canada's first female finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, released the first budget in 2 years, a budget that is not only a massive financial document, it's over 700 pages, so it's a big one, but a political one too. This budget could lead to a federal election. This budget was promised to be a big spending one, and it certainly lived up to that and more. So we begin our coverage digging right into the details. Let's go to CTV's Glenn McGregor with all the budget highlights.
Chrystia Freeland made a little bit of history, becoming the first woman to table a federal budget.
This is feminist economic policy.
A document that itself makes history for the enormous size of its deficits. $354.2 billion in the fiscal year that just ended, and $154.7 billion this current year.
We have to finish the fight against COVID, and that costs a lot of money.
The deficits are driven in part by the cost of extending pandemic relief benefits. The Canada Recovery Benefit will now run until late September, but will drop from $500 weekly to $300 in July. Employment insurance sick leave benefits will be increased from 15 weeks to 26 weeks, starting in 2022. For businesses, the wage subsidy and rent subsidy are also extended. Although the economy is bouncing back stronger than previously expected, the Liberal government is still spending $101 billion to stimulate it. Most of it earmarked for industrial innovation, clean energy projects, and helping small and medium-sized businesses implement new technology.
So the economy is snapping back, and the government says, with these low interest rates and with this amount of uncertainty, they don't care. We're going to stimulate the economy anyways.
But the big-ticket item in Freeland's budget, a long-promised national child care plan, modeled on Quebec's daycare system.
Our goal is that within 5 years, families everywhere in Canada should have access to high-quality daycare for an average of $10 a day.
Details will be hammered out in negotiations with the provinces. The federal contribution, pegged at $30 billion over 5 years, and once it's running, $8.3 billion each year after. There's more money for seniors, too. A one-time $500 bonus for old-age security recipients in August, and an ongoing increase in OAS payments by 10% starting in July 2022. Students will get some relief from loan payments, which won't come due until they earn at least $40,000 annually, up from the previous $26,000 threshold. The Liberals' Green Recovery Plan will see homeowners eligible for interest-free loans up to $40,000 for retrofits that reduce energy bills, things like new windows, insulation, and more efficient furnaces, all part of an effort to achieve new emissions targets, now increased from a 30% reduction from 2005 levels by 2030 to 36%. The budget directs $18 billion over 5 years to Indigenous communities, including $6 billion for infrastructure. It proposes new programs to enhance diversity in government and the private sector, with monies to encourage black and women entrepreneurs. And it provides $236 million over 5 years to combat sexual misconduct and gender-based violence in the ranks of the Canadian Armed Forces. On the revenue side, there is an increase to the excise tax on tobacco, $4 on a carton of cigarettes beginning tomorrow, and a new tax of a yet unspecified amount coming on vaping products. A new 10% luxury tax will apply to high-end cars and personal aircraft valued at over $100,000. And there will be a new digital services tax of 3% of revenues on online companies that sell to Canadian customers.
This budget is very likely the last the Liberals will table before the next election, so it is also a political document. And if the opposition parties decide they all can't support it, that campaign will begin before the summer. Glenn McGregor, CTV News, Ottawa.
All right, thanks for that, Glenn. Now, in a minute, we'll be joined by the leader of the Conservative Party, Erin O'Toole, to find out if he'll support it. As Glenn said, that could lead to an election. Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP, He will also join us again. He wanted universal pharmacare, not in there, extended to paid sick leave, not in there. So what will he do? He says he's going to support the budget no matter what, but we'll find out. Enemy Paul, the leader of the Green Party, will join us. And of course, the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, will drop by. We will get her reaction. So everybody you need to know will join us on this special edition of Power Play. But I want to begin with BNN Bloomberg's Amanda Lang, who is in the lockup studying all this. Boy, they promised a big spend, Amanda. This $100 billion over 3 years surplus, they even went $1 billion beyond that. They spend everything in the cookie jar. Plus, what stands out for you? Obviously, the $30 billion for childcare is the big one, but what stands out about that and everything else?
I mean, to me, Evan, the real theme here is this is a pro-growth budget. So what the government is arguing that even though the economy is doing better than anybody thought, the projections are better, deficit is lower, they are investing this money all the same because they want to grow the overall share of GDP. If they're right, what they're doing is making a structural change to our economy for the better and lifting up the overall number of jobs and the overall wealth per capita. Will they get that right? Well, that's where the question lies. The centerpiece, as we know, is that childcare piece. It's a big budget item, but it has a big payoff. So if they can get that done, although you know better than anyone, there's a lot of politics in getting that done, that's a big payoff. There's a whole bunch of stuff, but it's not without creativity. I must say, you know, when you look through where they're spending, they have this kind of new digital plan to help companies get digital and invest in the future. There's a bunch of smattering of money for AI and genomics and things like that, getting kids back to work, something like 250,000 jobs for young people. So there is spending in there that'll be tough for people to argue with. The question will be, could they have been more prudent? And that's one that it'll take time, I think, to reveal. Did we need to spend this is going to be the question. The government will say we're spending and there will be a big payoff.
Yeah, I'm going to get to the revenue side because that's basically the equivalent of a financial haiku. It's tiny because they're really relying, as you say, on the idea that investments lead to growth. $30 billion in childcare, they hope, you know, based on the Quebec model, that's a lot of money, $30 billion. They hope that will generate dollars by getting families, mainly women, back in the workforce. Let's not forget the green infrastructure. They added about $17.6 billion on climate. They've upped their climate targets, by the way, reductions of now close to 36% of 2005 emissions levels by 2030. That's about a 6 or 7% increase. A lot of green infrastructure there in terms of the transition. What do you make of that? How do companies avail themselves out of that, especially in hard-hit industries?
The devil will be in the details. And in fact, the first reactions that I was getting from people today who are in the lockup was really that there's not that much there. There's not much that's new. There is some infrastructure spending that we already knew about, the sort of electrification of transit. I will say this, Evan, and this is kind of like one of those more boring line items, but it's important, especially for resource industry companies. And that is there is a form of a corporate tax increase in this budget that the Liberals have talked about for a while. It's a reduction on dividend interest deductions allowable. Super boring sounding, but I'll tell you this, it could hurt oil and gas companies disproportionately at a time when they can least afford it. So there are things in here where you're going to see some major pushback from big corporations. That's probably the corporate tax increase that people will dislike the most from the corporate side. Otherwise, there's not a lot of revenue generation, as you say. A little tax here and there, luxury cars and boaters. Nobody's going to cry over that.
No, they don't generate almost anything. Those almost are signals. But, you know, how do you pay for this? They allege that the economy is going to bounce back in 5 years. But political promises that last for 5 years, I don't put much weight in after a couple. Okay, Amanda Lang from BNN Bloomberg has done great work today. Hang on. We've got now Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole joining us to get his reaction, both from a policy and a political point of view. Mr. O'Toole, good to have you on the program. Look, let's start politically, because people will want to know if you've seen this budget. They promised big spending. They got it. This is a matter of confidence, could lead to a federal election. You've seen it. Will you support it?
We're going to be talking about it this week, proposing some amendments, but I'm really disappointed out of the gate, Evan. There's lots of risky debt in the future and no plan for economic activity. In fact, it will actually hurt economic activity in some parts of the country, some sectors. We need every sector firing. We need people back to work. We need a plan to be competitive again. And this had no plan and lots of debt on our kids' shoulders.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Just in terms of their deficit, they're alleging that once they have this $354.2 billion in 2021, within 5 years they're down to $30 billion pre-COVID levels. What do you make of that? Do you buy those numbers?
I don't buy anything from Mr. Trudeau. Remember, he said originally he'd never run a deficit more than $10 billion. Now, getting back to $30 billion is back to where he was pre-COVID. He had $100 billion of debt before the crisis, Evan. And with no plan for jobs, no real plan to save small business, a couple of months of Band-Aid solutions in a time where we're seeing variants and Canada go into the worst wave of this pandemic, the third wave, because he didn't secure vaccines. So incredibly disappointed, massive spending, no focus, big risks for the future of our country. It's a big risk.
What's the risk? Let's talk. The centerpiece is going to be childcare. They promised this, I think, since I was a kid and probably you were a kid. Now she's saying $30 billion over 5 years. Then it actually goes up. That's real money, sir. Childcare, they say, has an economic bounce that it drives mainly women, but women and men, into the workforce, and that actually has a job multiplier effect. They say that's a good investment. What do you make of the childcare investment?
Well, it's real money, a lot of money, no real plan, Evan. And as you said, they've promised this three times before. It seems like they didn't even consult the provinces. Are they going to have conditions on Quebec, which has been running their own program for many years? How many places do they think they will create? How do they address the needs of suburban or rural voters and families? This is something that they promised before and never delivered, and it's not going to help most families. So we're going to propose smarter ideas here, Evan. I think we need to help parents. We need to get everyone back working, but they're actually going to put jobs at risk in large sectors of the economy. So maybe their plan is people won't need childcare because they won't be working.
Right. Okay, again, $6 billion a year, they say they're going to consult. It is provincial jurisdiction. They say they're going to consult with the provinces over the next 12 and 18 months to figure it out. Every province will be different. I think the only string that I see attached here, Mr. O'Toole, is that you got to use it for childcare. You can't dump it into general revenues and put it to something else. What do you make about the green infrastructure, the innovation fund, that they're going to boost that all sorts of industries are going to be able to get grants, loans, and subsidies to be able to make the transition? They believe that is an investment, again, I'm using their words here, as we dig through this 700-page document, to invest in the future. What do you make of that? There's billions in that as well.
There's billions sprinkled around almost like they're planning for an election, but not actually planning the future of our economy, Evan. You know that we launched our climate change plan last week with real investments in small modular reactors, in hydrogen and carbon capture, utilization and sequestration. We need to use those technologies in effective ways, not sprinkle billions all over for no impact whatsoever. So as I said, this was a lot of money, but no plan.
Just on the sprinkle, I mean, I get the politics of all this. This is $17 billion of new spending on green technology. They had just done 15. That's not a sprinkle. That's real dollars. I mean, it's hard to pretend that that's just, getting you a little damp. That soaks a lot of things in money. Now, the question is, do they get bang for their buck is a different story. But those are real numbers.
And do they get emissions down? That's what's not clear either. What we specified in our plan last week were all huge areas to get emissions down while allowing the resource sector to produce and have tens of thousands of people work in that sector. They seem to be once again attacking core sector of our economy. And the weight of debt they're putting on the shoulders of our kids, Evan, if we see inflation, if we see interest rates change in a few years, Mr. Trudeau seems to have no concern that he's putting at risk the prosperity of this country based on, you know, another $500 billion worth of debt. It is very reckless to not have a plan for jobs, but to just have deficits as far as the eye can see. That's not leadership.
Just two things on that. I know that your plan committed again to hit 30% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. This new budget, they say, will have a 36% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. So they're actually upping the targets on that. Just on that last point about job creation, they are investing in a lot of these programs as extra $100 billion in surplus. And again, their projections here, and we got to crunch the numbers, is despite the fact that the economy is already actually slingshotting back, there has been actually a remarkable growth here, even despite the pandemic. They say that they still need to spend it. Are you saying that you would not have spent that extra money on these programs and let the economy kind of bounce back as it has done right now?
Well, some of the economy is bouncing back, and we have to focus where it's not. They acknowledge between 500,000 and 1 million jobs are lost or underserved. You know, people have seen wages dramatically cut. That needs to be where the attention goes so that people can get back working, and then we can get a plan to get back into balance, Evan. That's what we've been proposing with our recovery plan for Canada, a serious plan to get jobs and the budget under control. Mr. Trudeau seems to be okay not helping large sectors, no real plan for small business, a couple of plans for a few months in terms of new hires for jobs. We'll be having variants and we'll be having COVID for the next year because we're so slow on the vaccines. We'll see that risk there in our economy. So we need something much more substantive in creating jobs. And it seems to me that Mr. Trudeau has made this budget more about his election chances than really actually addressing the long-term prosperity of the country.
Just real quick, tax, not a lot of revenue here. They say they're relying on growth for revenue. There is a tax on the digital giants, as it were, a 3% tax on that. And there's a tax on luxury boats, cars, and planes on that. Overall wealth tax. What do you make on the tax on the digital giants? Are you in support of that?
I think we have to have a way to level the playing field for Canadian creators and content. I've also said we have to look at the modern digital landscape and instead of bailing out who Ottawa chooses, make the playing field much more fair. So we are looking at a number of proposals to address that and the unfairness of the web giants. So there is a recognition that something needs to be done, but on several bills they've promised for months to bring something to Parliament and they haven't.
Mr. O'Toole, okay, so fair to say you're going to make some amendments, but this does not look like a thumbs-up review so far. Not that I'm shockingly surprised about that, but I always appreciate your time, and we'll find out how your party votes on it. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, so that's Aaron O'Toole, the leader of the Conservative Party. Look, didn't expect him to support it. I don't expect him to support it, but as he says, he's going to make some amendments, and we'll find out what happens on that. We will be joined by Chrystia Freeland, and we will be joined by Jagmeet Singh, because, look, for this to pass, someone's got to support it. Now, Jagmeet Singh has said that he would before he saw it. Now, we'll find out later what he actually says. But the Green Party leader, Annamie Paul, joins us with her reaction. Ms. Paul, good to have you on the program. You had asked for some investment from the Green Party. In the Green, there's $17 billion in new spending on green infrastructure. They've upped the target of greenhouse gas emissions from 30% below 2005 levels by 2030 to 36%. What's your reaction? Is it enough? I think you're on mute. Annamie, hang on. Annamie Paul, just check your feed there. This happens a lot. You may be on mute.
It's completely me. I'm sorry about that, Evan. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's so okay. We all do it. I feel like we're on the family Zoom call. Go ahead, Annamie Paul.
Yes, we always welcome investments in green technology, in green infrastructure, et cetera. This, though, is not a plan. We don't say it just to be contrary, but we need a much more ambitious target if we're going to do our fair share. We've said that it needs to be 60%. We hope that the Prime Minister will go to President Biden's climate summit on the 22nd and announce a target that is much closer to 60%. So we're definitely not going to pan any of these investments, but this does not add up to an ambitious, bold plan for the climate.
Oh, okay, 60%. Yeah, I have not heard in my leaks that it's going to go to 60%. I was hearing closer to 40, but we'll find out. What about the other spending? Let's talk about the future. Childcare, $30 billion over 5 years. After that, it will rise to over $8 billion a year. The Liberals have long made this promise. Again, it's provincial jurisdiction, so they can't exactly roll out the details until they negotiate with the provinces. But the big carrot they can dangle is $30 billion over 5 years and eventually moving towards this 50-50 split, towards $10 a day. Childcare, what's your sense of that?
Well, the Green Party has supported universal childcare for a very, very long time. And so any indication of seriousness about that is great. That being said, Evan, you know, this is a long-term promise. Minister Freeland accepted that it's a long-term project. And given how fragile this parliament is, I don't know if it's anything more now than an electoral program promise. But it's certainly something we support. And I guess I would add that if the federal government feels comfortable, as they should, investing in early years education, I would ask, why do they not feel as comfortable investing in post-secondary education? There was very little in here for students, certainly not universal post-secondary education, no debt forgiveness of federal student debt, just a waiver on interest, and most importantly, no urgent student benefit for the summer at a time when we know students begin working in May and the jobs aren't there.
Yeah, just so I can remind people, what students did get post-secondary is relief from loan payments. Those loan payments won't come due until they at least earn $40,000 annually, up from the $26,000 household. So, yeah, they didn't do everything, but they did give them some relief in terms of paying back student loans. So let's get, okay, so that's some policy.
Well, Evan, to push back on that a little bit, let's remember that the students that go into the most debt are the kind of students that we should be protecting the most now. They're racialized, they're low income. $28,000 of debt when you're earning $40,000 or $45,000 a year, and that's the average amount of debt, is a crushing, life-defining amount of debt.
Right. Again, you're right. The loans won't come due until they are at least earning $40,000. The politics of it, I'm just giving you what they're saying on that. Okay, so we took a nibble out of the policy. It's a 700-page mm-hmm. document. Let's mm-hmm. take a bite out of the politics. Will you support it?
Well, I am going to be speaking with our caucus. One of the really disappointing things is that there was no virtual lockup for MPs. And for us, and so I really got to digest this at the same time as the general public, because I'm in Ontario with the lockdown. So we'll be talking about it. And look, there's a lot of good things here. We focus on trying to be collaborative. I would say the things we're most focused on are the urgent COVID response related things, because frankly, Evan, I'm very concerned that there isn't going to be enough time to really make progress on the more ambitious things, because it looks like, we're headed into an election. So for us, things like making sure that there is a residential tenant support, making sure that students have support for the summer. I was very concerned, Evan, about, did you notice this $300, the $200 reduction in the Canada Recovery Benefit this summer?
Yeah, I'm looking at these things right now, at the benefits, and I can show you a bit. They've actually increased some of those they've increased the availability of it till the end of September for $12 billion. But you're right, some of the details are different in terms of the wage subsidies and how much the benefit is actually worth. So we'll talk more about that. So you're not sure if you'll support it, but there's a lot in there. Okay.
What I want to see, Green Party leader. What I want to see, Evan, What I want to see is the really urgent COVID response, the holes that exist in the third wave. I want to see those plugged, because even if we have an election in 2 months, those are things we can get done now. The rest of these things are quite aspirational. I think this is more like an electoral platform for the government. If they want to spend 2 more years working on these things, we're there to help them do it. There's a lot of great things in there. But let's focus on getting people through this wave of the pandemic and those parts of the budget.
All right, Anna Meepal, Green Party leader, great to have you reacting. Budget day, very interesting thing. Now we have, so we've heard from the Conservatives and the Greens. I want to get to the Bloc Québécois. So let me show you the leader of the Bloc Québécois right now reacting, Bloc leader Yves-François Blanchet, reacting now to the federal budget. Let's listen, and then we'll be joined by his finance minister to get their reaction. Are they a dance partner here? Let's listen to the leader.
There are things in that budget which can only please to a listener from Quebec, because when we speak about pharmaceutics, or when we speak about aeronautics, or when we speak about electrification of transportation, or forests, those are sectors of the economy which are very important in Quebec, in which we are very innovative and have been for a long time. So there are some good things in that budget. But there's this point. Our parents and grandparents have been completely left aside in that budget. The government will have a deficit which will go up to $150 billion without caring enough to provide a significant support to the elders, and without answering positively a request from all and each of the prime ministers in Canada about a transfer for health care. And I cannot so far explain myself why he could get to that conclusion.
Okay, so that's Yves Blanchet talking about that. He's the leader of the Bloc Québécois. Let's bring in the party's finance critic, Gabriel Saint-Marie, to join us now. And let's start with politics, and we will get to the policy in a minute. This is a minority government. They're going to need a dance partner. And I know this is an election document, and there's going to be a battle in your province of Quebec. I don't know if you've spoken to Mr. Blanchet about this yet, but will he and will your party support this budget based on what you've seen?
But there's a lot of interesting measures in the budget, but our two main demands, health transfer plus old age security from 65 and plus 110 per month, are not there. So there's a big problem. What we're saying is that we will bring up some amendment to reintroduce those measures in the budget. If they're in, we're on. Otherwise, it will not respond of the demands of Quebec.
Okay. Let me just first outline that. All the premiers wanted a $28 billion health transfer that's permanent. That was missing in action. Not there. They did other things. So you're saying that's probably not going to be there. So that's interesting that that's on the budget. There was an increase to OAS, the old age security, and there was a $500 lump sum. And if we have the board, we can talk about that. So they did actually talk to some of the fundamental issues for seniors. You're saying for the Bloc Québécois, what you saw for seniors right now, not enough.
Yeah, exactly. What they're suggesting about old age security, it's in the future they will bring up a project of law to discuss this from people from 75 and up. But what we are asking is right now in the budget to have 65 and up old age security. In the budget, they're saying that there will be one-time paycheck for 75 and plus July coming, but no other thing than a promised future project of law. And this is not acceptable from our point of view.
Yeah, okay, so there's the one-time payment of $500 this August, so for 75 and over, and then they're going to be, I guess they have to get new legislation to boost OAS payments for people over 75 by 10%. Okay, so that's not enough for the Bloc, so that's strike two. I'm intrigued by the Bloc's perspective on the child care. It is $30 billion a year. $30 billion over 5 years, so that's $6 billion a year. Quebec already has a system in place. I don't know how this is going to work. Do the federal government then just transfer that money to the Quebec government to offset their existing payments on that? Do you have any indication of how that might work in Quebec, which essentially is the model for the federal system?
Yeah, and when I asked Madame Freeland a question after in the House just a few minutes ago, she remembered us that Quebec was a kind of pioneer, the feminist politicians in Quebec, to have bring this up more than 20 years ago. So for more than 20 years, we have been paying for this, put this in place. And what we are saying here in the Bloc, it's just, okay, great, it will make a major difference for the families, different families across Canada. But for Quebec, what we need is just transfer the money. We are already paying for this, and we've already been paying for this for more than 20 years. So don't tell us where and how to spend this. This is our money that will come back to us simply.
Right. I know you don't want strings attached, but there are clearly strings on this, which has got to go to childcare. All right. So, Gabrielle Saint-Marie, it doesn't sound at this point, I know you're going to make these proposals, but it doesn't sound like you're warm and fuzzy on this. It doesn't look like the Bloc is going to support the budget. So that will leave it up to the NDP. Thank you for your perspective. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, but it's not over till it's not over. So we will bring up our sub-amendment. And two times the House of Commons said we want more health transfer to provinces. So we will see. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Well, you're right. It's not over until the, I guess, till the music stops on this and the music is still playing. Okay, so that's the Bloc Québécois. They've got demands. Let me bring back BNM Bloomberg's Amanda Lang and the former parliamentary budget officer, our friend Kevin Page, who probably knows budgets better than anybody. Okay, so we did a lot on the politics. I guess we took a bite out of the politics there, and we keep nibbling at the 700-page policy. Let me go to you, Mr. Page. You've seen a lot of budgets. I keep calling this the order everything on the menu except maybe a couple side dishes. So this is a big one. What stands out to you? What's your overall picture?
Yeah, we've never seen a budget like this before, Evan. We've never seen a budget this large. Just the sheer size of the spending package, literally of over 6 years, it's $140 billion over the next 3 years, $100 billion in terms of stimulus. We've never seen a budget with so many measures. Like, there's literally 10 priorities in this budget. If you go line by line through the chapters, there's about 280 different movements to spending lines. It's not a big tax budget. There's a few initiatives. I think Amanda highlighted them earlier, but not enough really to change the overall line with respect to deficits and debt. So, yeah, I think the politics is going to be really important over the next few days. People are going to be negotiating amendments. I think for big ticket items like changes to the Canada Health Transfer that you've alluded to, obviously they're going to have to raise revenues. There's just, you're going to have to increase taxes, either corporate taxes or personal income taxes or even the GST. Otherwise, you can't finance anything close to another $30 billion in terms of a Canada Health Transfer. So I think it's not over yet, but it does look like an election budget when you see so much spending and so many initiatives.
Yeah, just two things, Kevin. Let me just stick with you. Amanda had talked about this earlier. They're saying they're in 5 years they go back without any revenue measure models or really of any significance back to almost $30 billion of deficit in 5 years, like pre-COVID levels. So I'd love you to sort of weigh in on that, or are these spending programs going to create structural deficits? And Aaron O'Toole was just on saying there's really nothing to support jobs in the economy for growth. So I'd love you to check in on both of those if you can, Kevin Page, and then I'll get Amanda to weigh in on both.
Yeah, so I think in terms of how do we get back to deficits, in that 1 percentage point of GDP in that $30-35 billion range? I think a lot of it is buried in those economic assumptions. It's a pretty strong economic outlook. I think Amanda talked to that as well. You have growth growing at 5.8% in 2021, 4% next year. That's much higher than what it was just a few months ago. That generates an enormous amount of revenues. On the spending side, is there obviously we're left with a structural deficit? The government is saying even in the outer years, they're fine to live with a small structural deficit of about 1 percentage point of GDP, about $25-30 billion. On the jobs and growth, And I think to run a $150 billion deficit in 2021 when you're expected to grow, 5.8%, that's going to you do run risks of really overheating the economy. So that's going to generate jobs. And, the government, by its own estimates, it can add another point and a half, even to that very rosy economic scenario. So 2021 could be a very strong economic growth year if we get the vaccination process done right.
Yeah, and then Kevin you got Page the Americans. They're going to the Americans' stimulus of $1.6 trillion could add a point there. So the rising American tide could lift the Canadian boat. Amanda.
Well, Kevin's hitting on this kind of interesting subtext here, which is that do we need to worry about inflation? Do you need to worry about too much stimulus in our economy? But if we start with the criticism you're going to get, you've already heard it from some political leadership. Where's the job creation? It is here. And I will say there's a lot of spending, but it's not indiscriminate. There's some actually really creative stuff here. And just one example is this Canada Recovery Hiring Program. It's only about $500 million, but its aim basically is to get businesses to hire ASAP. So they're going to backstop the cost of hiring to get it done this summer instead of over a longer period. That's smart. There's a $4 billion investment in helping businesses go digital. How are you going to do that? Well, they're going to send something like 30,000 young people trained as technicians to go in and help businesses. That's job creation. There's a lot of help for young people here in student grants, in summer job programs. So the government says in the budget, it's on track to create 1 million jobs this year, as it has promised. I think we just hit the really interesting point here, which is, did we need to spend this much? That's a tough political argument, right, Evan? We're overspending. Most people at the ballot box don't care about that. Are we prudent enough? We may flip it to the other side and say, did we spend so much that we actually overheated our economy? We haven't talked a lot about that. We haven't had an opportunity to.
Yeah, over my shoulder, I sense that that cold breath of inflation. You'd never know with an economy. All right, Kevin, you've done a lot of budgets. I mean, you're going back to 1995 with the austerity budgets there. How would you just overall characterize this? And if you're, if someone's sitting at the dinner table tonight and they say, oh, I got to digest this thing. Is this going to help me? Is this going to hurt me? In a year, where are we going to be? Do I buy these assumptions? Is this really the kind of budget I need? Just like to see it through your eyes. What would you say?
I would say, Evan, to a lot of people across the country, families, trying to understand this budget. There's just so many, there's 10 priorities, so many moving parts. It's going to take many days, really, to unpack this. I think we're all struggling with this. I think, households across the country are going to struggle as well. But they're going to find a lot of stuff, whether they're students or seniors or businesses that's going to impact them. And I think that has that kind of, again, that election feel. We've never had a budget like this. We've never, dealing with a global pandemic, still in the midst of this pandemic, infection rates are rising in big provinces like Ontario. We're worried about a recovery by the government's own admission. We're still well below where we were in 2020 in February. And then we're trying to transition to a net zero economy in an economy that's going to be much more digital. So the government's trying to lead on that. So it's a really complicated budget. In the mid-1990s, we had one objective, deal with the fiscal problem. This is a much more complicated situation.
Yeah, we're juggling elephants here. This is a big one. Amanda, how will the markets react to this?
I think it's fairly benign. I don't think the markets will see much reason to dislike Canada's debt anymore, at least for the foreseeable future, which the government's counting on. They're going to issue a lot of long-term debt to finance some of this. I will say, Evan, if there's a kind of a second theme, I would say the first theme of this budget is we're going to invest for growth. That's a bit of a show me. It'll take years to know if that's true. The second theme might be back to big governments. Just thinking of Kevin and watching those budgets over the years, for a long time, the feeling was governments should be small and get out of the way. Regulations should be small. It didn't really do much for Canada's productivity or business investment. Maybe big government will be the secret. I don't know. But this is government with a finger in every pot. I mean, there's a lot of spending in different ways here, different sectors, a billion here, a billion there. Is big government better? I don't know, but it certainly seems to be back.
Absolutely. And I think we have a radical transformation of the relationship between the federal government, the provinces and cities in a way just because of the nature of the spend. Man, I could just want to sit down and have a long dinner party with Kevin Page, Amanda Lang, just go over this. But that's my idea of a good dinner party. Everyone else is like, I don't actually want to talk about the budget, but we do. Kevin and Amanda, thanks so much. I really appreciate that. Just brilliant work as always. We got lots more on an extended version of Power Play. Chrystia Freeland is going to drop by, the finance minister, so will Jagmeet Singh. And we'll find out if, look, if the NDP don't support this, this really is an election budget because we go to the polls. We'll find out. So we got lots to come. Stay right here on our, pardon me, our special edition of CTV News Power Play Budget 2021. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our Budget 2021 special edition. Chrystia Freeland, the finance minister, will join us soon. So will the leader of the NDP, Jagmeet Singh. Will he support the budget? It's a big budget. There are big number deficits. There's a lot of spending here. The centerpiece, $30 billion over 5 years on childcare. The form of that, we just don't know. They still haven't negotiated that with the provinces. But when you are spending... what's the final number here on the deficit? $380 billion here as I get the final number here as I'm going through all my numbers. There's a lot for everybody. And one of the key features is for Indigenous communities. There will be a grand total of $18 billion over 5 years to Indigenous communities. Oh, sorry, it's $354.2 billion in 2021, dropping down there as you see. Indigenous communities over 5 years will get a grand total of $18 billion. Of that, $2.2 billion will go to missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls. Let me get the reaction now for the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, who joins us now. National Chief, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Your response to the budget and specifically the targeted spending here?
Well, Evan, we always say it's we have to maintain momentum and things move in the right direction because there's such a huge socioeconomic gap that exists between First Nations and the rest of Canadian society. So you need to maintain momentum, and progress doesn't mean parity. So you keep investing in education and training and housing and water and infrastructure. And so it's always say moving the right way. When you do the numbers, it's a 700-page document. So you've got to do the analysis and the assessments and link things back to the throne speech from 2019 and 2020. And we advocated for investments in missing, murdered Indigenous women and girls. So I'm glad to see that's there. We advocated for investments in ending the boil water advisories. And This is where we need two bills passed, Evan. We need this budget bill passed, but we also need the fall economic statement, Bill 14, passed, because that's where the $1.5 billion for water was in there. So we need both bills passed. And so we got to keep maintaining the investments going forward.
Okay. I think people would like to know what difference this will make, because you and I have talked a lot about the funding gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Canadians. What will this, well, let's call it the $15.5 billion, because I'm going to hive off the $2.2 billion for missing and murdered Aboriginal girls and women. But what difference will it make directly? Will that infrastructure directly tackle things like boil water advisories, communities? Will it go to education? Where in your mind should it and will it go?
Well, it's going to help. There's no question. But we've got to keep advocating for greater investments because there was a promise made to end the infrastructure gap by 2030. And so this moves in the right direction, but continual investments need to be made. And I need Canadians to get on side with this because the socioeconomic gap that exists between First Nations and the rest of Canadian society is huge. According to United Nations Human Development Index, Canada is rated 12th. But you apply the same indices to First Nations people, we're like 78th. So that's the gap that needs to be closed. So you need to continually make investments in education, in housing, and water, and training. And that's what it means. And you can't do this over one fiscal year. You got to have a 5, 10-year, 15-year strategy. And so, again, this is maintaining momentum. Progress doesn't mean parity. We still got some work to do, but it's moving in the right direction.
Right. And just quickly, last thing, $2.2 billion will be rooted to try to end the crisis for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. How will that money be used? How should it be used?
Well, again, there's you look at the budget, there was four themes. There was safety, community safety for women and girls. There was justice. We've always said you need to make investments in housing, safe shelters, daycare for First Nation women, transportation. So the list will go on and on. I think the National Action Plan has to be jointly developed with the families and get that done in place and then actually implement it. Again, we've had so many studies done. We just want to implement the recommendations going forward now.
The other thing that was striking to me, National Chief, was we've seen this play out so sadly, was institutionalized racism in the healthcare system. Mm. Is there enough in the budget to tackle that?
Well, again, there's starts there. And we lift up the family of Joyce Eshequan again, you know, for being such a hero for all of us. We've got to keep doing all we can, not only in the healthcare system, but racism there in the justice and the policing system, the educational system. So any kind of start or strategy that's going to be developed with First Nations involvement all will help alleviate that huge need that's there. So again, moving the right direction, we've just got to sit down together. It's a 700-page document. We've got to do the proper assessment reviews and make sure that First Nations are involved in some of these big dollar amounts that are talked about as well, to make sure that all First Nations people have access to them as well.
All right. National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, great to have you on and get your reaction to some investments in Indigenous Canadians. Thank you so much. I got to bring in the leader of the NDP, Jagmeet Singh, who joins us now. And from a policy point of view, you know, I always have to analyze this from a policy and from a political point of view. Mr. Singh, good to have you on the program. Let me start politically and we'll move to policy. I've spoken to Aaron O'Toole. I've spoken to the Bloc Québécois. Doesn't look like they're going to support this budget. They're going to make amendments and see. You have promised that no matter what was in it, you don't want to see an election now, so you are going to vote for it. There was no national pharmacare. You'd ask for that. They didn't really move much on that except for more of a promise. They did not move to enhance paid sick leave like you told me you wanted. Can you and will you support this budget?
Well, for me, Evan, the question really comes down to in a third wave with record numbers of cases, field hospitals being set up, people getting sick, racialized people, frontline workers, essential workers being sick, poorest communities in our country. Some of the poorest communities have the highest rates of infection and the lowest rates of vaccination. In that context, Canadians were asked the question, would they like an election right now? And they said it would be unfair and unsafe. I absolutely agree. In fact, I would add irresponsible. It would be irresponsible for a leader at this time, at this stage of the pandemic, to in any way trigger an election. So I've made it really clear. No, I'm not going to be irresponsible. I'm going to do what's in the best interest of Canadians. But there's lots of ways to critique what the Liberals have done. One of the biggest problems in this budget is the question that was on so many people's minds, who is going to pay the price of this pandemic? Who's going to pay for the recovery? And the Liberals have answered really clearly that it's not going to be the ultra-rich. They did not bring in any wealth tax on the ultra-rich. They did not bring in the measures that were required to get after the fact that you got web giants and some of the wealthiest people, the richest people in our country, the 44 richest billionaires that increased their wealth by $62 billion. And after this budget, they're not going to have to pay anything more. That is wrong. That was a choice that this Liberal government made, and that was a wrong choice.
Okay, let me just, I'll tell people what they did do. Was there a wealth tax? No. Was there a big tax on billionaires? No. What they did do is a 10% luxury tax on high-end cars, high-end boats and private planes over $100,000. They also slapped on a 3% tax on the digital giants on that. That doesn't raise a lot of revenue, frankly. They say that they essentially are going to grow their way back to pre-pandemic levels of the deficit. They are going to go back to, they say, about $30 billion deficits, pre-COVID levels, within 5 years, based on the investments on things like childcare and green infrastructure. So they don't need to do the wealth tax as you've imagined it. What do you make of that?
I don't think that makes sense. We know that in this pandemic, the richest and wealthiest, the ultra-rich, made out like bandits. Why wouldn't we take this opportunity right now and say, well, to tackle the inequality and to answer the question, who pays for this, why wouldn't it be the ultra-rich? Why wouldn't we bring in clear measures to tax the ultra-rich? That shows to me a lack of courage and really a choice that Justin Trudeau is making. That in this pandemic, when workers lost their jobs, when small businesses were forced to shut down, when all these folks made sacrifices, they're going to have to continue to bear the burden. But the ultra-rich aren't going to. And that, to me, is a wrong choice to make. There is an opportunity now to do the right thing, and the Liberals have failed to do that.
They say they'll get to $30 billion deficits by 2025, 2026, even though it's 354.2 now. What do you make of the child care policy? $30 billion a year over 5 years, rising to over $8 billion in the years after. So some permanent funding. I just want people to understand the context. That does sound like a lot of money, $6 billion a year. I should just say, Quebec currently spends over $2 billion themselves on literally the program this is modeled on. So in your view, do you support this national child care program? Is it enough?
Well, our biggest problem when it comes to the Liberals and their promises is that when it's come to child care, they've literally promised child care for 27 years. That's nearly three decades. Three decades of broken promises. And so my bigger concern is that I don't believe that they're actually going to follow through on this. They promised this again and again. It's like the same rerun of a movie. They made this promise in the past, and I've seen this show before where they make a promise and then they break it. Most recently, they ran a campaign where they promised universal pharmacare in 2019. It showed up in their throne speech where they said they promised to do it. And in this budget, they completely abandoned it. So it's clear the Liberals aren't afraid of making a promise, a bold-faced promise to Canadians, and then turning around and breaking it. So that's the big concern here. There seems to be, in terms of the money, some commitments, but women who have been hard hit by this pandemic, who have lost their jobs or are struggling right. to care for kids at home while also caring for their aging loved ones, are looking at this and saying, are we actually going to get some help, or is, again, another phony promise? That's the question that I think people are asking.
Well, you know what we'll do? We're going to go get an answer right now because the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, is about to join us. But you will be supporting this, but you are not, you're critical of it. Okay, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, I really appreciate you dropping by. So what's really critical here is that this will not cause an election because Mr. Singh has said he's going to vote for this budget. So is there any incentive for the Liberals to listen to these amendments and change? Let's find out. We are going to now welcome the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, here. She made history as the first female finance minister and the first female finance minister to deliver a budget. So you made history on that. That's fantastic. Chrystia Freeland, that is good to have you here. Mr. Singh was just said he's going to support the budget, so I guess the political drama is out of it. But he still says, I don't believe you. Liberals have made promises, frankly, Chrystia Freeland, since you and I were kids, to talk about childcare. They've never done it. What do you say to Mr. Singh, who says this is a campaign promise, I got to see it to believe it?
Well, first of all, I didn't hear your whole interview, Evan, but you say that Mr. Singh said he will support the budget, and I'd like to say thank you very much. And I think that's the right choice. This is a progressive budget that's going to deliver jobs and growth for Canadians. So that's great news. When it comes to early learning and childcare and whether people should believe we're going to get it done, Evan, you are completely right. People have been trying to do this for more than 50 years. And I'm intimately acquainted with that because my mother was a sort of a rabble-rousing feminist in Peace River in the early 70s. And when I was 2 years old, that's when the Royal Commission on the Status of Women advised the federal government to build an early learning and childcare system across the country. And I still remember these Peace River ladies coming to our kitchen and they were all talking about Royal Commission on the Status of Women. I didn't really know what that was. So women have been fighting for this for a long, long time. There are three differences today, Evan. First difference, we have put our money where our mouth is. $30 billion over 5 years, more than $9 billion ongoing. That is a very significant commitment. We can do a lot with that money. Second difference, I really think, is Quebec. People now see across the country that this is not some progressive feminist pipe dream. This is something real. It can happen, and it can deliver real economic results. You know, our guys here in the Ministry of Finance, they think this could be the economic policy for Canada that moves the dial on economic growth the most since NAFTA. and could deliver 1.2% of GDP. That's a lot. And the third difference, I think, Evan, is COVID. I think COVID has been an epiphany for a lot of people, and they have seen that without childcare, parents, and actually usually mothers, just can't work. And the numbers show it. We have the biggest drop in women's participation in the labor force in two decades. So I do not underestimate how hard this is. There's going to be a lot of work ahead, but I am totally committed to it. Our government is. I think Canadians believe in this and want it. We're going to get it done.
Okay. I mean, could there likely an election before you can negotiate with the provinces because it's a provincial jurisdiction? Just very quickly, because I know your time is limited. What about the people in Quebec? I know the Bloc wants no strings attached. They've already got this. They've had this for 20 years. It cost them, by the way, over $2 billion. So I know this is $6 billion a year for the rest of the country, but it's an expensive program, as you know. Will Quebec get money? What happens to Quebec? Do they just get their share of the $6 billion to offset their existing cost to childcare? Like, how do you negotiate that with each province?
Well, you are totally right, Evan. What we're going to need to do is have bilateral negotiations with each province and territory, and we're really looking forward to that. I think Quebec is going to be a big, big winner here, and I actually think our bilateral negotiations with Quebec are going to be among the easiest because Quebec already has a system, and the good news for them is after doing it for 20 years on their own, they're going to have the federal government helping them out.
Okay, I know you got to go. The 30 people are going to know, wow, these are massive deficits, $354 billion. Not a lot of revenue there, Minister. How will you actually pay for all this?
Well, first of all, Evan, let me just point out that the $354 billion for last year is actually significantly below our projection of $381.6 billion. So that's some good news, and it shows that we're careful in our forecasting. I would also really point out to people, this is reasonable and sustainable. We have a declining debt to GDP ratio. We get down to a deficit of 1.1% in 25-26. And how we're going to pay for it is through jobs and growth. And that's what this budget is going to deliver.
I know you got to run. You got an incredibly busy schedule. That is the Finance Minister, Chrystia Freeland, joining us on the special tonight. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Also, good to deliver the news that looks like the government's not going to fall on your budget. Thank you, Minister. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for that news, Evan. Great to talk to you.
All right. So that is Chrystia Freeland, the finance minister. Look, would I like to have done a longer interview with her? Yeah, she's got about a million things lined up right now. Lisa LaFlamme is going to have her on the National tonight. So on CTV National News. So that's going to be great to see Lisa also dig a little further in there. We've got to get some reaction from the business community. Perrin Beatty, the president and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce will join us later, and so will Goldie Hyder of the Business Council of Canada. They are going to weigh in, but I'm going to bring back our panel of Amanda Lang and Kevin Page, the former Parliamentary Budget Officer. Well, Amanda, that was a short interview with Chrystia Freeland, but she says, look, these are all very... I've never heard $354 billion of deficit called reasonable before in my life, but I guess post-pandemic we have to change all of our definitions. I know Kevin Page is like, wow, reasonable. That was kind of mind-blowing. Yeah. But what do you make of how she's talking about this? And you know, I should just say the political drama seems to be out because Jagmeet Singh just pledged he's not going to an election.
So, I mean, I think the message she delivered, I think you had a great conversation. She's on message there, and that is, this is pro-growth. This is, they're making the gamble that by spending in this way, they will grow the economy, and that therefore the percentage of growth relative to the economy stays manageable. I think it's important, as you are doing, to stay focused on those out years. 5 years from now, once you've seen the payoff from this kind of structural increase in the size of program spending, which is what we're looking at, even if it grows the economy, we're still in deficits that a few years ago we would have been horrified by. So we need the context. We know that last year, this fiscal year ending, was one of a kind. We hope never to see one like it again. The government has to get its way out of it. But it was already in $18 billion in deficit heading in, and it doesn't really have a glide path to zero. Zero is, you know, you don't want to be tedious about this, Evan, but your deficit means they're spending more than we sent them. And if they want to do that, they should really go back to the ballot and ask for more, because otherwise they're spending more than they deserve to spend. The operating budget should come out to zero, in my view.
Yeah, well, this is called the phenomenon of baseline shift, where suddenly $30 billion deficits are like a good thing in 5 years, as you say. Yeah. A year ago, that would be a different story. Kevin Page, I think we can't underestimate the idea that, you know, Chrystia Freeland said there's going to be bilateral negotiations to get this child care done with the provinces. I don't think that's a given. I mean, you know, that there's jurisdictional issues, there's very technical issues, because each province has their own child care. Give us a sense of, and there's going to be an election between then, what does that do to the promise of child care that Jagmeet Singh has a kind of asterisk beside?
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say that there should be an asterisk beside this initiative, though, like, you know, the minister as well said, like, you know, again, $30 billion for the provinces is an enormous amount of money for the initiative for childcare, for early child learning could be make a significant difference. So, but it has to be negotiated. These will be bilateral agreements. We've seen them after we've changed escalators on the Canada Health Transfer. It can get, you know, difficult, like with the provinces, because they're, you know, they're strained right now. It's going to take time to negotiate it, but the money is there. It's hard for the provinces to say no to this sort of money. And again, the priority is there. I think the country, by and large, is going to be behind, you know, a better childcare program. So there's some goodwill, but it's going to take time. Can they get the money out the door as early as this year? Probably not, but it's going to be an important drawn out negotiation.
Two last things before I leave you real quick, Amanda. Jagmeet Singh said, this is kind of a remarkable moment. How are they going to pay for all this? He said, well, they missed a big opportunity for a big wealth tax. Kevin and you have both talked about the fact that this is super light on the revenue side, because the assumption is that the growth side, they're going to grow their way towards some kind of balance. Do you think it's a miss that they didn't do a bigger wealth tax? They just sort of nibbled on luxury items like boats and cars and planes?
I think Kevin made the point earlier that if there are additional spendings heading our way, negotiations around the health transfer, for instance, you may see other taxes considered, including raising the GST, which many economists would say you should do before any other form of tax. One thing I'll just note, though, Evan, wealth tax is politically popular. How much it raises let's put a pin in that. Is it effective? GST is actually effective. And one thing we really saw in these documents was the hit to GST from what happens when you shut down restaurants, travel, tourism. Those are huge areas of GST. We just got to get them back open again to get that revenue back in government's hands. So once we get there, there is some support. You could raise the GST and raise an awful lot. And remember, just raise it back to where it was. You don't have to go further than that and raise a lot of additional revenue.
I've been around long enough, Kevin Page. You ain't raising GST before a potential election. That is, you know, I you can be as economically savvy as you want, but there's no politician that's been around, and Amanda knows, that is going to do that, even if it rains gold coins after that. What do you make of the wealth tax situation, Kevin Page?
Yeah, I think it's going to come back when we're campaigning, in the next, you know, campaign for the next election. It'll be there. I think we've seen in the UK and in the United States that, you know, those governments are, you know, not afraid to say we're going to raise corporate income taxes, or we're going to make the personal income tax system more progressive, increases to the higher marginal rate. So I think that comes back. Again, we're not going to get a stronger Canada Health Transfer. We're not going to get PharmaCare. We're not going to get a basic income program with this level of revenues. But, you know, again, even in this track and revenues, there's a lot of growth in this economy. Revenues do come back, but yeah, we don't have the funds to pay for those kind of programs right now.
Yeah, you're 100% right. If you thought there was going to be universal pharmacare, no. If you thought there was going to be universal, some kind of universal basic income, not there. All missing in action. Amanda and Kevin, awesome to have both of you here. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Let's get from Canada's business leaders now. Perrin Beattie, the president and CEO of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, is going to weigh in. And so will Goldie Hyder, a president and CEO of the Business Council of Canada. All right, Perrin, I'll start with you. From the business point of view, not big taxes on corporations. I know that there's tax on the digital giants. What's your big takeaways today and the assumptions and what this budget does?
There were a number of elements that were very positive. The continuation of the wage subsidy and of the rent subsidy, the new provisions for hard-hit sectors and for small businesses, the attack on interprovincial barriers to trade, the investment in upskilling and so on. These are all positive. What is also positive is that we're not looking at an expensive pharmacare program here. On the other side, as you've been pointing out, the real issue here is can they achieve the level of growth that they're counting on to be able to get the fiscal house back in order? And that's, I think, where the concern will be on that side of the ledger.
Goldie Hyder, are you concerned? Because the assumptions here, and I remember, you know, my folks saying, never assume you make a blank out of me and you and me. What do you make of this budget?
Well, look, let's recognize the historic moment that we are here. It took Canada's first female finance minister to do what no man was able to do before her and bring about legitimate childcare program for the long haul. And I'm very encouraged by this. We've been very supportive of this, along with other business leaders, and particularly working in partnership with Labour and others to make sure that childcare is not just seen as a social program, but also an economic program. When you have the aging population that we do and you have the productivity issues that we do, we can't afford to have people sitting at home. So getting people back to the workforce, this does it. Yeah, it'll have some complications with some provinces here and there, but I think it's a true win-win-win, and my hat's off to Minister Freeland because she will be known as the minister responsible for having brought in childcare that addresses an issue. We can debate the policies as people have, but it's done now. Now I think it's really key that we see the benefits of that. Most people believe it pays for itself. The second thing that jumped out at me was the balance that she had to strike, Evan, between sort of where we are now with this pandemic and where we're going. And I think the phrases that she was used about, you know, finish this fight, reminded Canadians that they're not getting too far ahead of themselves. Because remember, this government is keen to get back to its agenda that COVID interrupted. They weren't able to do that because we've got to deal with the here and now. And I thought that the narrative reflected the reality of the moment. There is more to do on the jobs and growth. A lot of the numbers that you're talking about are economic averages. Can go one way or they can go the other way. I think the good news here is they now see what the benefits of growth are. We were expecting a $400 billion deficit. We got a $354 billion. And you know how that happened, Evan? It happened because we grew a lot more than we were planning to in the last 4 to 6 months. So the government should see that growth is its friend to be able to afford the kinds of programs, some of which are necessary, like childcare, others that Perrin mentioned that I don't think are necessary, that, you know, we don't have to worry about for the near future.
Well, let me talk about that, and I'll go back to Perrin Beattie. Growth is necessary. They believe that spending $100 billion, actually it's $101 billion over the next 3 years, which was their max plus one of their stimulus, is needed despite what Goldie just said, despite the existing growth that we've seen and that what Goldie has described as a boomerang from the savings. In your view, is the stimulus targeted in the right places in order to justify the assumptions that this will actually drive down the deficit and be the smart investments that they claim they are?
We'll see, and it will take time for us to see. But one of the things that is very clear is that in the medium term, we are going to see the economy bouncing back. We've had the economy for the past year in a medically induced coma. When we take those restrictions off, there's an enormous amount of pent-up demand in the economy, a lot of that coming from transfers, which the government has made over the course of the last year. So we will see the economy coming back later in this year. The real question is, can we sustain the sort of growth that we're going to need to have to be able to bring the level of the deficit down? And, you know, these are ambitious goals. They're talking about having the deficit down in 2025, 26 to where it was to actually below where it was before COVID started. And so that's quite a challenge.
Yeah, can I just jump in on that?
Yeah, that is
Evan?
Quite a challenge.
I think this is,
go ahead,
this
Goldie.
This is a place where I think there's a miss. I think the government gave itself a bit of a free pass on the fiscal anchor that we've all been so adamant about. To go back to the fiscal anchor of the debt to GDP ratio, where, you know, to 49% debt to GDP ratio in 25, 26, that gives them a lot of room to spend still. And I'm discouraged by that. I think we would like to have seen a bit more fiscal discipline, a bit stronger fiscal framework, because there's no question the government's very comfortable on the spending side, but we need to be comfortable on the growth side. And a lot of the things that the government announced today, including on the green infrastructure and the incentives that they're making available, actual cash that they're making available for something like carbon capture, which of course will go over very well in Saskatchewan and Alberta and other places. I'm encouraged by that. And what it speaks to is the need for an actual partnership between business and government to address these critical issues, whether it's climate change, whether it's productivity and growth in our economy. It's when we work together that we can do that. And I'm hopeful that in the execution of this plan, because plans are no good if they're not executed, that they will reach across to us and to others to say, let's do this together. Because when we do so, Canadians benefit from that.
Okay, I got about a minute here, and I don't want to overuse a terrible old sports cliche, but, you know, you always interview athletes and they say, one game at a time. I know the recovery in the future is critical, but we are in the fight of our lives here in COVID, and Parambiti, businesses are, small and medium businesses. Let's talk short-term, immediate needs. The one game we're playing right now, is, and believe me, it's not a game, is there enough support in this budget to help small and medium businesses survive now?
The good news is they've extended the supports. Can more be done? Yes, more can be done, and more may have to be done if this third wave is as devastating as we're afraid that it's going to be. Most importantly, though, we need a strategy. The next document we need is the plan for reopening the economy and for restarting it and how we get safely from here to there.
And last word to you, Goldie Hyde, for big businesses who are supposed to be incented for productivity, innovation, and a green infrastructure. Is this enough to help resource sectors, oil and gas sectors, those sectors, quote, transition?
Well, look, I haven't had a chance to go through the budget in detail, but I understand through the Strategic Investment Fund and others, there is money set aside for the aerospace industry and other industries. The greening agenda clearly has to work with the energy sector. I think it's a good beginning. There's probably more to do in trying to figure out how we're going to be able to get to the other side. The main lesson here is that I think business and government working together to bring about growth can get us to the other side in a much more financially, a good financial situation than we're currently forecasting. Because we're actually forecasting getting back to growth at 1.9% 5 years down. That's not good enough, Evan. We need to be much more deliberate and ambitious. And I think having a strategy and a vision, as Perrin alluded to, is the way forward for Canada.
Okay, Parambiti, Goldie Hyde, great to have the two of you reacting. There's lots of reaction to this budget. But outside of maybe the most significant budget we've seen in decades here, there's lots of other news happening. I just want to check in Minneapolis because emotions are running very high there, as we know. The jury, this is just breaking news, is now deliberating after the closing arguments were made in the Derek Chauvin trial. That is the ex-police officer accused of murdering George Floyd.
This use of force was unreasonable. It was excessive. It was grossly disproportionate. It is not an excuse for the shocking abuse that you saw with your own eyes.
The prosecution argued the former Minneapolis police officer, as you just heard, used excessive force when he pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes last May. The defense counters that Mr. Floyd's health and drug use caused his death. They find out how long this deliberation lasts. And, of course, the political resonance of this trial continues. All right, let's get back to the budget here on our budget special. Is this the pre-election budget Ottawa expected? What is the fallout? What is the political fallout? This is great because we've got Tana McCharles and Bob Fyfe joining us on that. What did they take away and what's the political fallout? Lots to come in our special edition of Power Play. Stay with us. Welcome back to our Budget 2021 special. This has been called the most important federal budget of a generation, certainly one of the biggest. It's the first budget from a female finance minister. It is the biggest budget, is the highest spending budget since the Second World War. And it's one of the longest I've ever seen, clocking in at over 700 pages. It also promises $30 billion over 5 years for a national child care program and going up close to $9 billion after that, as Chrystia Freeland, the finance minister, was just on this show telling us. We know that there's no political drama. Jagmeet Singh was on this program. He says, I'm not going to an election in the middle of a pandemic. So the politics and any drama that this is going to topple the government and lead to a federal election is gone. So what are we left with in terms of policy? And that doesn't mean a federal election is out of the picture in the fall. The Globe and Mail Parliamentary Bureau Chief here in Ottawa, Bob Fyfe, joins us. Tanya McCharles, senior political reporter for the Toronto Star, is here. Lindsay Tedds, professor at the University of Calgary and a member of the government's task force on women in the economy, joins us. And we'll bring back the former parliamentary budget officer, Kevin Page, as well, because, I don't know, you can never turn the page on Kevin Page. Tanya McCharles, your opening reaction, first politically and then the standout. So your standout political fallout of this, and then the standout sort of policy thing that your takeaway is?
Look, I found this was a really interesting document politically, because while you're right, there, you know, the air went out of the balloon once the NDP said they would support the government. That's all the Liberals need to survive a vote on the budget in the Commons. I found it really interesting the way that they're casting their measures as, you know, boosting Canada's labor force and participation and productivity and casting it forward. And I feel like they did a whole bunch of sneaky things there to eat the Conservatives' lunch. They didn't bring in the big tax hikes that Pierre Poilievre, the finance critic, was warning about. They didn't do a lot of things. And they poured a lot of money into helping small businesses through the not just the continuing emergency period, but supports to become more digitally nimble and to make the green transformation. So I found there's not just sort of seizing the lunch of the NDP on the left, they're also kind of elbowing the Conservatives out on the right.
Yeah, it's interesting, Bob. I'd love to know what struck you. They certainly didn't do that universal pharmacare, almost daring the NDP to call the election. And of course, Jagmeet Singh says, I'm not doing that. What struck you both politically and from a policy perspective, Bob?
Well, clearly this is a pre-election budget. They scattered money in every which direction to every voting bloc. You have women, you have students and youth, seniors, small business, Indigenous and racialized community. There isn't virtually anybody that they haven't provided money for. And particularly, I was speaking to a senior official last night who was saying, you know, we in the past, we've kind of ignored the small business community. We're not going to do that now. And I think they've carved that also off as a voting block for themselves. So they are definitely going to go in the fall, and they are lining up their ducks. In terms of the most significant policy measures, clearly, it's child care. This is a significant move, and we know in the case of Quebec that it has drawn women into the workforce. And I think a lot of people are arguing that this will not only be good for our children's future, but it will pay for itself if you draw more women into the workforce and they pay taxes. I think there was also some very significant measures for small businesses to help them through the pandemic and to get themselves back on their feet in the fall.
Yeah, and you say they're lining up their election ducks with $354 billion in deficit this year and $101 billion of new spending. They're lining up their golden geese, it seems like, not just their ducks. But Lindsay, let me bring you in, because Bob and all of us have commented on this. Which is, there's not a lot of tax revenue here. They are really saying the assumption here is we can have big economic growth, especially if we invest in things like national child care, the $30 billion over 5 years, to get out of the quote-unquote she session. Could you walk us through the economic accession, assumptions there of how that has a multiplier effect in terms of growth?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember when it comes to early childhood education, we're talking about an impact threefer, both short-term and long-term. First and foremost is being able to provide affordable, accessible childcare draws mostly women, but there will also be men in this that will be drawn into the labor force. Childhood, early childhood education is expensive in this country. In many of our large cities, it is as much as double a university degree to have early childhood education for your child until they start with grade one. So we're talking about that economic impact. But there's also the jobs that they create. And this is jobs that are predominantly held also by women and particularly racialized women. And so being able to ensure that there are more jobs and that they are higher paid through ensuring quality in our childhood education system, that's the other impact. The third one, of course, is human capital formation. And we're seeing a lot of the Head Start children in the United States be, achieving really incredible things as they move forward. So we shouldn't overlook the long-term impacts of this. But in terms of what the multiplier effect is, we look at for every dollar invested, it's somewhere between $1.50 to $6 coming back as the program unfolds. So to say that more than pays for itself is in fact accurate.
You want to weigh in on that, Kevin Page, because you had said the economy is already growing at a really fast rate, yet they've still decided to stimulate with $101 billion for things like this childcare. What do you make of this decision to try to grow their way out of these deficits?
Yeah, so, I agree with, certainly with Lindsay that the research is strong, that these are good programs and that the payoffs are both short and long term. So I think, like, one thing that maybe hasn't been discussed too much around, like, where did all this money come? How did we get, a debt to GDP ratio that was forecasted to be over the medium term around 55%? Now it's down to 50%. And yet we have, like, $100 billion stimulus program and additional monies in addition to stimulus. And I think the government basically revised the economic projections from in December. They thought that, the economy was going to struggle a little bit in the next couple of years, and they talked about different scenarios. Now these projections are much stronger, so they generate a lot more revenue. So basically 75% of all these measures, like literally $140 billion of measures over the next 5 years, 6 years really, it's financed just through basically changing the economic projections. And the government hasn't built in the kind of multiplier effect that Lindsay talked about, so growth could even be higher than what is in here, including growth in 2021, which I think if the government really wanted to go for election, you're never going to get a better time than the fall of 2021 with all the stimulus that's going into the budget.
And it could be over 5% growth.
All of the vaccines going into Canadians' arms as well. Like, let's not forget that. There's going to be an more optimistic mood in the country if in fact, vaccines are in people's arms by September. If, in fact, the economy, which looks like it's poised to rebound quickly, does exactly that. So Kevin's exactly right. That's the political sweet spot for the Liberals.
Yeah, economic inoculation and maybe we hope other inoculations. Last word to you, Bob. Anything else stand out for you? What will be the ongoing story of this budget as we leave this?
Well, the thing that surprised me out of the whole budget was there was no money for health care. As you know, the health care system is struggling. The provinces have been, and the premiers have been asking for the federal government to provide more money, particularly with an aging population. But there was no money there. They've gambled on, I think, the government saying we'd rather put our money into childcare and into other areas because we're going into an election and we get no benefit if we put money into health care. The provinces will not thank us and neither will Canadians.
Yeah, the premiers wanted that $28 billion. They didn't get it. But there's a lot of money here, and there's going to be a lot to digest. Listen, I really want to thank Bob and Tonda, Lindsay and Kevin for your analysis of this historic budget. Thank you for watching. Lots more to come. Chrystia Freeland will be joining Lisa Laflamme tonight. We will be back here in 23 and a half short hours. Hug your loved ones. See you tomorrow.